This episode is made possible by Awin. Unlock the full potential of the creator economy with Awin's influencer management solutions and partnerships. Leverage the platform's best-in-class technology and award-winning expertise in end-to-end influencer program and campaign management to your brand's advantage and drive impressive results. Go to awin.com/emarketer and hit the Get Started button today.
There's only so far that you can follow this strategy, and you have to understand that consumers have different preferences, to Zach's point. You know, it's ultimately about removing friction in the experience, but what removing friction looks like is very different depending on who that customer is.
Hey gang, it's Thursday, May 9th. Jeremy, Zach, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast made possible by Awin. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two gentlemen. We introduce the first one. He is based in New York City and is the Senior Director of Briefings. It's Jeremy Goldman.
Great to be with you.
Hello there. Hello. We're also joined by one of our senior retail analysts based just above Chicago. It's Zach Stambel.
Hey, Marcus. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, fella. So today's fact. So, gents, do we know when people started using Hail Mary in football?
Oh, no, you're asking a football question to the wrong person.
Oh, really?
Years wrong ago? People. I hate football.
Oh, no. I thought you guys...
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it's just basketball then.
I will say... Oops. 1947.
That's my fault. Nope. Jeremy, I guess?
Is it from, like, ancient times? Like, does it predate... football? I'm just guessing.
Also, the term, yes, but when it got kind of used as when it got used in football.
I thought it was a trick question. Okay. 1927.
No, not that far back. So for folks, for context, Hail Mary means to throw up a last second kind of prayer of a pass way down the field in hopes of rescuing the game from certain defeat. And people will use Hail Mary in other contexts as well, but that's what it means for football. And so it was started during a playoff game nearly 50 years ago now, 5-0, between the Vikings and the Cowboys, December 28th, 1975, when Cowboys quarterback Roger Staubach was asked about his game-winning touchdown pass to Drew Pearson. He said, "I closed my eyes and I said a Hail Mary." And that's how it got started.
Oh.
What's crazier is that the pass right before that, as they're driving down the field, was also Staubach to Pearson. Pearson catches it, falling out of bounds. It's a great catch. After the play, there's a Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota's at home, and Staubach and Pearson play for the Cowboys. And so there's a Minnesota Vikings security guard on the sidelines who runs up and tries to kick Drew Pearson of the Cowboys whilst he's down.
Wow.
And Brian DeArdo of CBS was noting this in a piece that he wrote at the end of 2023, actually. But if you go and look at the video online, you can see him run up and try to kick him. Terrible decision.
I feel like that's against the rules. I could be wrong.
It should be. Not in the 70s. Anything's possible. Anyway, today's real topic, how Amazon is able to sell more things and more ads. In today's episode, First in the League, we'll cover Amazon No Another News today. Let's do it. Gents, they just explained how they did to start 2024, Q1 that is. And we'll focus first on the largest segment of revenue, which is selling things online. And so we're playing slice of pie, Zach. How was Amazon able to grow online store sales, which is that line item I said makes them the most money? They were able to grow that by 7% in Q1, a significant turnaround, for context, from a 0.1% decline a year earlier, from negative 0.1 Q1 last year to plus 7 Q1 this year. Up to three reasons why: attribute shares to each, and it has to add up to 100%.
Okay, so I'll go with a whole half, 50% to fast delivery times.
Okay.
Amazon's made a huge push to get things to your door quicker than ever, and it's really working. Nearly 60% of Prime orders in the top 60 U.S. metro areas arrived the same or next day in Q1, up from around 50% in Q2 2023. So that's 50%. 30% is its big tentpole sales event that it propped up. during the quarter, which is Amazon Big Spring Sale, just provided a real lift. And then the final 20% is its ever-growing selection, which is interesting because it seems like Amazon has everything, but there have always been some holes in its catalog, and it is finding ways to fill those holes. And Clinique recently became the first Estee Lauder brand to set up shop on its premium beauty store. And it's making it easier for third-party sellers to list items on the site using a new Gen AI tool.
So you mentioned, so we've got 50% faster delivery times, 30% the Big Spring Sale, 20% growing selection. On the Big Spring Sale, their first ever one, end of Q1, and our Rachel Wolf noting that whilst it delivered a modest sales lift, it was a successful Prime acquisition tool. Nearly one in four non-Prime shoppers subscribing to Prime to access better discounts according to payments. Quick question on this, Zach. I mean, they have, you know, Prime Day, which is typically in the summer. Then they have a second Prime Day they added, the kind of early events or early holiday Prime Day, kind of around October time. They've added this one, Spring Sale. Do you see them adding another one anytime soon? And what do you make of this strategy?
So what's really interesting about this one in comparison to those other two is that this one, you didn't have to be a Prime member, which is why it serving as a Prime acquisition tool is really kind of interesting. What we're seeing is that they continue to prop up targeted category-specific sales. They just announced their third of those sales that will take place in May. They had one for gaming, one focused on pets, and now they're going to have one on beauty. And so these targeted events really make a whole lot of sense because you can just push brands to pay for retail media dollars while also providing some lift in terms of sales.
Jeremy, what do you make of it? I mean, does it dilute some of the impact from some of the other events eventually? I mean, maybe it doesn't matter because if you have multiple, you know, then you're making enough growth from those to compensate for how much it might dilute the other ones. But what do you make of this strategy?
Yeah, I think you raise a really good point there. One of the things that I've noticed is that it's obviously great to raise the bottom line in the short term, but then, of course, you kind of have to anniversary these sales in the long term. That's going to be a challenge in the future. I think that this is somewhat sustainable because you could get a little bit deeper with all these different categories. And as Zach pointed out, Amazon has a lot more categories than people give them credit for, in part because they're so heavily weighted towards a few categories, but they obviously have the ability to follow this strategy for a while. But then, you know, to what extent do you start to see diminishing returns with the big sales? I think that that's certainly something that we're going to, you know, be able to witness firsthand over the next few quarters.
So we said 30% of this turnaround in online store sales growing 7% in Q1, up from flat last year. 30% Big Spring Sale, 20% growing selection, but 50%, most of it, is fast delivery times. And as you mentioned, Zach, Amazon saying that close to 60%, just to reiterate, 60% of Prime orders in the top 60 US metro areas, 60% of those orders arrived the same or next day in Q1. That's up from 50% less than a year ago. So from 50 to 60% in terms of speed of delivery and the same or next day on those orders. Is Amazon right to focus on speed? And how much does delivery speed move the needle for folks today out of 10?
Eight and a half, I'll say.
Oh, eight, maybe nine.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal and it provides a moat for Amazon. So first of all, if you know that your toilet paper will arrive at your door within hours, then you are going to think twice about hopping in your car, wasting a half hour driving back and forth to Target or whatever physical store you're going to go to, because you can just click and buy. So it gives you a reassurance. And then the other piece of it is that Amazon doesn't have to focus as much on pricing when it offers this very clear convenience element, because people are probably going to be willing to spend a tiny bit more because they know that the item that they purchase will quickly arrive at their door rather than having to wait a day or two or however long it will take from some other merchant.
So I want to cite something that you said, and I'm wondering whether, I mean, speed seems to still be important. It was, you know, when they started Prime, they noticed that people wanted things faster, and that is one of the things that really propelled Amazon to where it is now. But you were writing also that people want control and they want options. And you had a piece you were pointing out that being able to choose specific delivery days was important for 64% of consumers because their main concern was missing attempted deliveries, something 54% of people said, according to IMRG. So do you think they should be at this point focusing more on control and options more so than speed, than getting it to people a couple of hours sooner?
I think it totally depends on who the consumer is and where that consumer lives. So if you're a consumer in an urban environment where the box will show up on your doorstep and very well maybe stolen, you really are focused on that control and the assurance that the package will arrive on Wednesday when you'll be home rather than on Tuesday when you're in the office. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're in a suburban environment where that's less of a concern and you just want stuff fast, you just want stuff fast. Like it doesn't really, you might not need the same level of control as you do somewhere else.
Okay.
Yeah. Another quick point about that, by the way, is that one shouldn't assume that Amazon has the same market penetration in, you know, urban versus semi-urban, mm-hmm. not quite rural, you know, communities, but like in the burbs, just because they don't. There's obviously like a certain, there's only so far that you can follow this strategy, and you have to understand that consumers have different preferences, to Zach's point. You know, it's ultimately about removing friction in the experience, but what removing friction looks like is very different depending on who that customer is.
Yeah. Absolutely. So zooming out that line item, online sales, 7% growth for Amazon in the quarter. But that line item continuing to account for less of Amazon's revenue. It's a 38% of its pie, of its money-making pie, 38% in Q1. That's the lowest it's ever been. 2 years ago, just 2 years ago, online sales accounted for half of Amazon's revenue. And so as that goes down, other things, of course, go up. One of those other things is advertising. And so we're going to focus on that for a second with Slice of Pie. That accounts for 8.3% as of Q1. That is 8.3% of the money Amazon makes coming from advertising. And so, Jeremy, how is Amazon able to grow its ad business by 24% in Q1, up even more so from the 21% it registered the same period last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are a few reasons for this. I'm going to overwhelmingly give one answer, which is just the Prime Video switchover to by default starting to have ads in front of people if they are Prime Video customers or viewers. That is a, you know, huge part of this story in this quarter specifically, and obviously something to follow throughout this entire year. Then I think really the rest of it is retail media largely, but if I had to break that out as kind of almost two different stories, I might say 15% retail media, like quote unquote traditional, and then 5% offsite, because Amazon is looking to move offsite with retail media in the same way that a lot of other players are looking to do. And it's going to be a storyline that we're going to be following very closely as well.
Mm-hmm. So 80% Prime Video having ads, 15% retail media traditional, 5% offsite, roughly?
Yep, I would say that.
Okay. It's been pretty consistent, the ad revenue growth. It's now five consecutive quarters of over 20% ad revenue growth. So incredibly strong. And the share of money Amazon is making from ads keeps growing. In 2022, Amazon made six times as much from online sales, the first one we talked about, as it did from ads. Six times as much. And today, it's four times as much. So ads, closing that gap, is still a ways behind online sales, but it is closing in on that portion. Zach, what do you make of where Amazon is ad-wise at this point and how that links into their retail business?
Well, I think the interesting piece is it really goes hand in hand with the strength of the overall retail platform. And when you see relatively strong growth in terms of retail sales, you're inevitably going to see strong growth on the advertising ends of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite the flywheel. Looking at Amazon's share of advertising, share of the digital ad pie in the US keeps growing. We expect them to have 14% slice this year. What does 14% mean? It means it's two-thirds the size of Meta, who's in second place. So Amazon is two-thirds the size of Meta in terms of digital ad dollars in America. And put another way, when encountered, it's the same amount of share Amazon has of the digital US digital ad pie. Amazon has the same amount of share as the next seven digital ad players combined, from Microsoft in fourth all the way down to Pinterest in 10th. So it certainly feels like a triopoly at this point.
Oh, you beat me to the punch. I was going to say, there's
no.
A reason. I was going to say, there's a reason why we kind of refer to it as the triopoly now, because, yep, you know, it really is so heavily weighted towards a few players. You know, the one thing that I'd add, and I'm normally like, I feel like the least cynical of all of us analysts, but maybe here today I'm like putting on a different hat. I think that there are two interesting things to follow as storylines throughout the year. One thing, the fact that they just obviously Prime Video ad supported viewers, according to our forecast, they went from zero to 130.4 million, you know, for 2024. You know, that was their, obviously, like, you can't even chart that growth from zero to something else, right? But then we're expecting over the next few years, like 1.4%, 1.2, you know, very, very low growth for Prime Video ad supported, in part because Prime Video is been around for a while. So you look at that, it's very hard to expect this kind of robust growth from Prime Video ad supported, and you're going to have to just put more ads on it, which then or charge more from them, which obviously is the same thing that the retail media bucket is going to be faced with. You know, how do you maintain a strong user experience on the e-commerce portion of your business, which is obviously the thing that brings in the dollars? You don't want to get in the way of people transacting, which is, you know, still the significant part of your business, just in the name of growing the retail media ad business. And I think that that's going to be a storyline definitely to follow.
Yeah,
I think that's so true. And I think the ad load, you know, they are just dipping their toes in those waters. But over time, inevitably, it will increase, probably somewhat significantly.
Mm-hmm. All right, gents, we end with a grade. Zach, I'll start with you. What's your grade for Amazon's Q1?
Yeah, I think it's an A. I mean, they're operating in an environment where consumers are being cautious. They're being thoughtful about what they're spending on, how they're spending it. And Amazon managed to deliver pretty strong numbers.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy?
I think I'm going to have to say A minus, only because, because I'm being so negative today. But in all seriousness, I think, you know, you know, their potential upside, and that they haven't totally realized with cloud and other parts of their business that we haven't talked about, that could be contributing a little bit more. But the core parts of their business, you know, would definitely be an A as well. So overall, you know, it'd be interesting to see if they can continue this trend next quarter.
Yeah. Speaking about next quarter, Q2 expectations, Amazon expects revenues to grow somewhere between 7 to 11%. Last Q2, for context, was 11%. So that's what we're expecting. One point to note, profit more than tripled to over $10 billion. And profit was up for a lot of the digital players as they used last year to get their house in order. So that's something else to point out. And then also, just in terms of, we talked about triopoly. This year, the duopoly, so Meta and Google, their share of the US digital ad pie, 47%, you throw Amazon into the equation and you get to 61. And that share of the triopoly will be growing because Amazon is driving that. So I think we're going to end with a consensus A for Amazon, which is the last of our digital ad giants. We covered a bunch of the other ones, so check those episodes out. But Amazon gets the A for Q1. We'll check in on Q2 in a couple of months. Thank you, gents, for hanging out today. Thank you so much to Jeremy.
This was great. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Thank you to Zach.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Thank you to Victoria. She edits the show. And Stuart, who runs the team. Sophie, who does on social media. Thank you to her. Thanks to everyone for listening in. We hope to see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen. It's an e-marketer video podcast made possible by Awin.